Hi, I'm CJ Liu, live from One the Gathering, and I am traditionally a host on Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio, and my show plays on Thursdays from 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'm filling in for this glorious event. I'm so excited, and I have Ragini Michaels. Welcome, Ragini.
Thank you, CJ. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's awesome. So Ragini Michaels is an internationally recognized speaker in behavioral change and author of a book coming out this May, and I love the title.
Do you?
Unflappable. 6 Steps to Staying Peaceful and Happy No Matter What. So this segment is all about, centered around the purpose of this event, and it's really shifting from fear to love. And so we're going to take a two-part look at shifting from fear to love. So, Ragini, I wanted to share with everyone, we spent how many hours talking about this during lunch? Now, was it the gigantic salad that we had? Seriously, people, we had a salad that was like a trough of salad because we ordered incorrectly. So we're eating this trough of salad, talking about this event, planning for this event. It felt like 2 hours. Was it about 2 hours?
It was at least 2, if not 3 hours.
Yeah. And here's a curious thing about this topic. It's very hard. This is a hard topic. Making the shift from fear to love is a really hard topic. Because what I notice is you can talk about it intellectually, and I understand intellectually I want to do it. I would like to do it. It's good to do it. You know, it's like eating vegetables. I will try to do it. But it's hard to do, right?
It's very hard to do, actually.
Yeah.
Actually, to live it is hard to do.
Yeah, and then, interestingly enough, we had a conversation where I was like, you know, I'm always about specificity, and I was saying, Ragini, we have to come up with some examples about 9/11, and like how to figure out a way to incorporate that into the show, and it was really hard. It was hard to talk about 9/11, and it was because it was one of those things where it was so hard to figure out the truth and where you stood on it. I don't know, you had a really good way of example, reason of why it was so hard.
Well, I want to reference Miguel Ruiz, who is a Toltec shaman or a shaman in the Toltec tradition, who was saying that the one way to heal the planet, was in one of his books, and I'm sorry, I don't remember which one. It might be The Mastery of Love. He was talking about the way to heal the planet is to look at 3 things. Mm-hmm. 1 is know the truth. 2, extend forgiveness to others and yourself. And 3, indulge in self-love.
Mm.
So in my opinion, the hardest thing about that when we get together as human beings is to agree upon what is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
If you can agree upon what is the truth, then it becomes easier to move into forgiveness and self-love.
Right.
So I think that's the sticky part of actually moving from fear to love.
Right.
Is somewhere in there, somebody's going to come up with, well, this is the truth. No, this is the truth. No, I'm right. No, you're wrong.
Right.
And a lot of what I think happened for a lot of us in 9/11 is we got polarized to some position, basically on fear, out of fear. And then we start clinging to that position. And if you want to move to love, it requires a change in the way you relate to your position without giving it up.
Right. Right. And I think the thing, if you follow that model, and that there are really 3 things to heal the planet, the truth is the thing that's the hardest thing, right? Agreeing what the truth is about 9/11 is the hardest thing.
Truth is a very tricky thing. People use the word a lot and bandy it around a lot, but there's lots of different kinds of truth.
Right.
There's scientific truth, there's psychological truth, there's emotional truth, there's physical truth, and there is, I'm going to assume, a spiritual truth of some kind.
Right.
Right? But you have to decide on what the truth is that you're talking about and where it is that you're stuck. What truth are you really holding on to in order to make this movement from fear to love?
Right.
It's a funny thing because you really have to be committed to your truth, whatever it is you find out it is. At the same time, you have to not be attached to it.
Right. And that's why we had a hard time coming up with the 9/11 example because, you know, I was like, well, this is my truth. And, you know, probably there are thousands of other truths out there in terms of what people think happened and who's right and who's wrong and what the truth is. And really from talking to you, the truth is everyone's right and everyone's wrong. Right.
It's interesting because if you look at it from a nature perspective, you know, the universe is incredibly, filled with diversity. If you look at how many different birds there are, how many different insects, how many different kinds of fish. And just because we have minds, like we're the only ones that have this kind of I don't know what you want to call this incredible mind we have that's such a gift and such a pain in the same way. But it, we have this capacity, and why would there not be an incredible diversity of perceptions here?
Right.
If that's the case, then part of our job in embracing truth so we can make this movement out of fear to love is being able to understand the diversity of truth that exists in our lives as human beings and find the way that is the right way for each of us to be able to become big enough to embrace all of those truths as both right and wrong, or maybe neither, but simply an expression of the diversity of the unity of life.
And here's the funny thing. When we were going through trying to figure out an example to talk about that people wouldn't get triggered on because they had their truth on it, I was struggling and I was saying, well, Ragini, how about if you use this example or use this example or how about that example? And they all kind of fell flat. Now, I don't know whether it was we're tired.
No, I think they fell flat because they were all traumatic things that you were speaking of.
Yeah.
You know, like actually the most traumatic event that could occur.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want to move from fear to love, you have to, really from a psychological perspective, you have to remove the trauma around the fear before you can actually deal with the fear and leave it behind.
Right.
So if you've got a, if you've got trauma around it, personal trauma, best thing to do first is to help get somebody to help you remove the trauma so you can be directly connected with the fear.
Right.
Then you have all these wonderful new tools from energy psychology and hypnotherapy and spirituality and all these different arenas to help you actually embrace the fear, learn what you need, and move to the next step of would be forgiveness.
Right.
Actually. So you would find your truth. You can't really find your truth unless you remove the trauma.
Yeah. Now, we were talking about how it was so difficult.
Yeah.
And last night at 2:30 in the morning, I did this moving from fear to love. And so I wanted to share this.
Yes,
I wanted to share the example because thank God the universe brought this to my attention. Because, you know, it's one of those things I was really having a hard time grappling with this idea. And so I had a really good experiential sense of really what it meant. And what happened is I've been doing all this energy body work, which has been delicious and wonderful. And as part of that energy work, they did something to switch my female and male signs. So my moon and sun were crossed. And when they switched those signs, my whole energy in my body shifted.
Mm-hmm.
Where my husband was giving me a hug and he said, I feel like I'm with a different woman. I mean,
a little scary.
It is.
Husband.
Or good. Depending on what you're after.
You're right there. How long have you been married? Maybe it was good.
Yeah, exactly. 15 years. Hey, cheating on my wife, but I'm not cheating on my wife. How cool is this? So my husband was saying, you know what? It's kind of weird for me because I don't know, and I'm actually going to do more work this weekend. And I have, which is actually the work that I did where I shift these moon and sun things was actually preliminary work for a big piece of work I'm going to do this weekend. And he said, you know, I'm scared because I'm not sure what kind of person you're going to become when you come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, that's nice. What I'm feeling on the inside, like, oh, great.
I'm supportive. Huh?
Exactly. I'm doing this work so that, you know, I can feel more love in my heart. You know, it's like one of those beautiful things that you do because you want to reach your inner essence and get to the purity of who you are on the deep inside, the really deep inside. So he said, yeah, I'm, you know, already I don't know what's happening and it feels weird to me. And he said, I don't know what's going to happen when you get back. So, and you know what? He said that to me, and for 2 days straight, I've been kind of pissy. Did you pick up the kids? Did you get the cream? Why didn't you get the cream? You know, he's been back to me like, I got the cream. You don't appreciate when I get the cream. You know, so we've had 2 days of this insane back and forth, right? And what is it? It's basically fear that came out in anger. That's what I've, now in my, you know, retrospective look, it was really anger. That I just didn't, anger that this could happen, the fear of the unknown, what would happen. So I had anger. And last night, I'm like, oh, you just don't understand. You know, I had one of those evenings. And I said, you know what? I really don't want to talk about this because I'm tired. I've had a long day. The kids have been back at school. I'm just going to sleep. And I never do that. Usually I like drag him. I'm like, we're going to talk about this and we're going to talk about this until we solve this thing. You know, we sit down and torture my poor husband. He's so great. So I said, no, I'm like, I can't do this tonight. I can't. So good night. And then it's like, and you know how bad it is to sleep in that thing? You're like, good night. Yeah. You know? Yeah. You're not curled up in a ball, you roll over. It sucks. And then because I'm doing all this energy work, at 2:30 in the morning, I'm feeling toxins emanate from my skin via itchiness. It's awful. So I'm like itching. I wake myself up. And then I'm like, I'm sad. And then and then I'm like, I don't even know why I'm sad. And I'm sitting in the bed, and then all of a sudden, you know, like I'm trying to shove it down, and then I'm like, just kind of ugly, disgusting cry that's like, it's awful. So it's a, and you're kind of half thinking, I hope this wakes up my husband so he knows how badly he has pained me. It's like, he's like, what's wrong? I was like, I'm sad. And he said, what's going on? And I said, I'm doing all this work to be a better person, and you're telling me that you may not like the person I've become, and my whole goal is to become the best, this true essence, and you're saying, you may not like it. This truly sucks. You know what I mean? This is awful.
Pat you on the back. Poor baby.
Yeah. So it moved from anger, then it moved to incredible, trembly, ugly cry.
Yeah.
And then it moved to the fear of the future. And then it moved to him truly feeling in his heart that, I mean, this was not me just being pissy. This is like a deep, scary fear of the future. And then it opened up his heart, and he said, I truly am sorry. I had no idea that this is what you're going through. Because I didn't say anything to him. He's been telling me all this stuff, and I'm like, stuff it down, stuff it down. This is what Asians do, stuff it down. So I stuffed it down. And then finally, it's just a blubbering mess. But you know what? He apologized. And when he apologized, which I think is what you're talking about, forgiveness, mm-hmm. I could finally, and you know what? I've been doing so much energy work, I could feel my energy shift. He forgave. He said, I'm sorry, and everything shifted. And when that shift happened, what happened was my heart opened mm-hmm. to him. And I said, well, and then he's like, but here's where I'm coming from. And did he tell me where he's coming from before? Yes. Could I have repeated it exactly? Yes. What's happened is you're worried about this. You know, like I can repeat it almost verbatim because I'm actually good at repeating things verbatim.
But you didn't actually hear him.
I didn't hear him, and I didn't feel him in my heart. Yeah. And that was a key ingredient. And when I opened and I could really feel what he was feeling on his heart, then I started feeling incredibly. I could feel the pain and the sadness. Morgan, it was hurting my heart. I literally was feeling pain in my heart. And then I asked for forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And then we talked more about the truth, what you describe as the truth.
Yeah.
And then we got to love. Like, he's like, I really, you know, I want to tell you. I start crying. He said, I really do love you. I want to know that I love you. And I know that no matter what happens, I have faith of the person that you're going to become. No, I'm not going to cry. I can have faith in the person that you're going to become, and I have faith in the process, and I have faith in the universe, and I truly love you, and I know that the right thing is going to happen.
There you go.
So there we went, from fear to love. And here was my personal discovery about this, and I wanted to ask you about this. I know this is a really long story, but my personal discovery about this, of moving from fear to love, is that, at least in my personal example, I went through a bevy of negative emotions that I did not want to feel. And when I did feel them, it hurt like heck. No, I literally felt physically painful. Like, I thought I was going to be, I couldn't breathe. I mean, it felt physically painful. And then I moved to, you know, then we moved to forgiveness, then we moved to love. But do you think, Ragini, that when you move through this, when you truly open your heart, is there pain? I mean, is there pain that people feel normally? Is this... Am I normal? That's what I'm trying to ask you.
You're exceptionally normal and exceptionally not normal.
Because oh, good.
Because you were willing to feel your pain.
Right.
That's why it's so hard. That's why this is a very complicated thing.
You know,
because you have to feel what you feel. This is like the first challenge in moving from fear to love is actually mm-hmm. feeling your feelings.
Yeah.
You know, and people, anyone who's wanting to make this change from shift to love should be bowed down to and said, you are fantastic
yeah.
for being willing to actually feel what you feel, because it hurts the heart.
It did.
The heart
it hurt.
Your heart gets contracted and it hurts because these negative emotions are there, but they must be embraced if your outcome that you're going for is to actually find love.
Right, and is that what you meant? You said earlier that there are several different perspectives, three different perspectives, a psychological perspective, an emotional perspective, a spiritual perspective, and making the shift. Mm-hmm. Is that what you meant by the emotional perspective? What did you mean by those things? Let's hit one of them at a time. What do you mean by, which one do you want? You start. Emotional, psychological, spiritual, you start.
Okay. I think if you're going to make the shift, right, you want to know how to do it, which is what I hear people asking. How do I get from fear to love?
Right.
There's three basic components that it's helpful mm-hmm. to look at if you're a person who likes to know what you're doing before you do it. You know, a lot of people don't need this, but the people who want to know what's going to happen before I do it, then it's helpful to get a little insight here. So here's a little structure, right? There's three levels to look at. One is your emotional self, and the challenge that we meet there is actually feeling our emotions. That's what we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's the challenge. Am I willing to take the risk to actually feel this, feel the pain in my heart? Because in reality, can I go back for just a second? When mm-hmm. you talk about getting to love, it's important that you kind of ask yourself, what do you mean by that?
Right. What do you mean by love?
What do you mean by love?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of us think that love is going to look like all beautiful, all happy, all good, all sweet, all kind, all compassion, mm-hmm. all harmony. Mm-hmm. And no matter what comes up in your life, you're going to respond with love and compassion and sympathetic joy and a harmonious embracing of that person.
Right.
But what we don't usually understand about love is that in order to get to that, the first thing you have to be able to do and the last thing you have to be able to do is embrace all of the negative things that go with that in order to get to the actual spiritual experience of love, which is not the same as love that's the opposite of hate.
So what do you mean by all the negative things? Are those things that you were referring to, the emotions?
That you were talking about.
The emotions.
Anger.
Ugly crying.
Yep, jealousy, envy, all the things, all the different manifestations of fear.
Right.
You know, irritation, annoyance, all the things that we feel, judgments, all the judgments that we all carry. Many people think love means I'm never going to have a judgment again.
Mm-hmm.
That is not my experience of spiritual love.
Right.
It's the way you relate to your judgment. It comes up. It goes by you. You stay where you are, right, centered in the moment.
Right.
You know, so how do you get there? I mean, a lot of people understand this, right? This is not what I'm saying isn't anything new. The question is, how do you actually get that? How do you actually live it? So first step is you have to be courageous. You have to be willing, you know. And if you need, when I started doing this, I used to get my mala from my guru. I used to put books, all my little books around me. You know, I had Hafiz the poet and Rumi and all these other things. And then I'd have my little stack of crystal things, you know, everything that I had. And I'd hold the mala in my hand and I'd get the picture of my guru and I go, all right, I'm going to face this emotion. And I would go, you better not desert me now, guy. You know, so you need to be willing to gather around you every resource that you have mm-hmm. that makes you find in you your natural reservoir of courage that is absolutely there in every human being.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. But if you never put yourself in a situation where you're going to get to find it, then you may go through life thinking that the truth is you don't have any courage.
Mm.
And when you operate out of the truth that you don't have any courage, if that's your truth, then you're going to become you're going to be very scared.
Right.
And you're not going to be able to get to where you want to go very easily if love is your outcome.
Right.
Or letting your next door neighbor have their dog, or whatever it is that is happening around you that it would be useful for you or your community to allow to have happen.
Mm-hmm. So here's what the recap. You're saying to get to all the juicy stuff that we want, compassion, understanding, acceptance, forgiveness, we have to enter the gate that precedes that.
Yes.
And the gate that precedes that is the gate of pain.
No.
What is the gate?
Not the gate of pain. It's the gate of opposites. It's the gate of opposites. It's the gate of realizing that human beings are both, we all know this, we have a light side and a dark side.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately our unconscious process is geared to make us move so we grab the good side and avoid the bad side.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to go towards pleasure and hang on to it and move away from pain and avoid it. This is fundamental, and I will tell you that all advertising and marketing knows this about human beings and use it.
Right.
So as individuals, we need to understand this plays a role as well in our spiritual development and in our awakening of our consciousness.
Right.
And the re-education of the unconscious mind. Because if you really want to get conscious and stay in the world, you've also got to get, you know, honor that your unconscious mind is this powerful mountain of possibility, and it's all going in to whatever it is you believe is your truth that you might never have examined.
Right. So the gateway that you have to walk through is the gateway that you refer to as paradox or duality, and being able to embrace both.
That's right.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about, let's go back to the psychological and spiritual and emotional perspectives.
Well, the psychological, and we kind of touched on already,
yeah,
which is really getting to understand that everybody's viewpoint is valid. Mm-hmm. It's valid because it's coming from a particular place where the person is viewing something,
mm-hmm,
through a particular set of filters and a particular set of values.
Right.
So it's valid. Nobody's viewpoint is accurate.
Yeah.
And I think that's hard to get.
Yeah. You know?
And it's also very freeing when you understand everybody's perspective is valid, but nobody's perspective is accurate.
Yeah, and that's actually, I love that you have a phrase that I think is from NLP. That's, what is it? It's that's true, but... What's this phrase? It's something like, that's true, but not complete.
Yes, it's incomplete.
Right.
It's valid, but incomplete.
Valid and complete.
All
so someone,
right, valid and incomplete.
Right. So when you hear perspective, including your own, and I did this, I'd say it's valid, but it's incomplete. And I think that's a key one.
I will tell you that I have 100% commitment that my work is not only the truth, but it will actually save the planet, right?
Yeah.
However, I'm also very aware that as valid as that is, and as 100% convinced as I am that it's true, I also know that it's more than likely not.
Yeah.
But I'm going to live my life as if it were, but not to the degree where I'm going to lambast people who disagree with,
yeah,
me and say, you know, you're wrong and I'm right, because that's a waste of time.
Right.
When you understand that everybody's viewpoint is valid.
Right.
So this is like the key on the psychological level, and if you're looking at something like 9/11, there's an enormous number of different viewpoints here about which is right and which is wrong, what's good, what's bad.
Right.
So when you understand that you're dealing with two sides, with duality, with opposites, and you have a way to deal with that, which is what my work is all about, then you're able to make that shift from fear to love more quickly because you have a way to deal with your psychology more efficiently.
Yeah, so if someone, so let's say, what if is, if someone comes to you, they're talking about 9/11, you feel triggered, you could say, you know, instead of being like, you know, challenge them and take them on, you could say, you know, I can see the validity of that, and I don't think it's a complete understanding of what's happening, but it's valid. You know, and if you can actually get there, I think you've made a huge step
forward,
don't you think?
You're more than halfway home. You're more than halfway home.
Seriously, I mean...
I'm serious. That is the hardest thing in the world to get, that everybody else doesn't think like I do.
Yeah. And you have to, like, literally... I met a guy on the plane, and he said... We were talking, and he's like, I totally disagree with gay marriages. And I have a gay sister-in-law, and I was like, mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, well, I just seen you, and you said the valid and incomplete. I'm like, okay, what is valid about? I'm like, so why do you think that? Or tell me a little bit about why. And you know what? That valid and incomplete thing made a huge difference. So I think
it's one of the biggest things that's helped me begin accepting other people for who they are and allowing me to shift my way of relating to them so I can let them be there.
Right.
That puts me like a way step further towards being able to find the love that is beyond opposites.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Where I'm not saying this is right and this is wrong. I may say it in my head, but the question is, if I know it's not the total truth, it's much easier to find a way to navigate life if you know that what you believe is true is not necessarily the truth.
Yep. So I see. So just a quick recap, valid and incomplete, that's one thing you can just chant to yourself. I think the other thing is know that there is this gateway, and the gateway is towards duality and accepting that these two things are there. And, you know, we actually have a bunch of really good work that we did on emotions, all emotions that Ragini talked about, and actually when they arise, how to actually get to a peaceful place. So check that out on www.fireitupwithcj. If you want to know more about Ragini or hear more of our two-part series on shifting from fear to love, then continue listening to this episode in one event at or listen to Fired Up with CJ at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time or 4 p.m.
My name is Ocean Robbins. My website is oceanrobbins.com. And I want to share the profound moment that this is for our nation and our world. As we commemorate 9/11 and all the suffering and tragedy of that day 10 years ago, let us also remember the resiliency of the human spirit, the power of humanity down through the ages to overcome so many tragedies and struggles and yet persevere and keep finding a way to choose love, to choose courage, to choose faith, to choose possibility instead of the darkness of history. Because the past does not have to equal the future. We have the capacity to learn from our history and to grow into something beautiful and courageous and bold and wonderful. And I think that this is a beautiful opportunity to honor not just the suffering, but also the beauty of life, of love, of all of us. Let's remember who we are and let's live it.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pat, host of the Dr. Pat Show and founder of Transformation Talk Radio. There's never been a more important time for me, my life, to take a look at what I fear and what I love. And so being born in New York City and growing up on the East Coast, 9/11 really hit me dead on in the heart. Like so many people, I had mixed emotions, emotions of not just fear, but fear and loathing, so to speak. So what is it about this year that makes it so special on the 10th anniversary? And why are we so involved in one, the event? Well, I'll tell you what it is. I've had to take a look at my life many times over, especially whether or not I love myself. And so for all of you out there that are open to having a different perspective and ready to make the shift from fear to love, please join me. We can do this one step at a time, but the most important part right now is to say yes. And don't forget to visit TransformationTalkRadio.com over the entire...
Hello, this is Shay. Love feels like heaven. Fear feels like the underworld.
This is Frederick Lehrman. I'm director of Nomad University, NomadUniversity.com. And I'm speaking to you today from Seattle, where an international webcast is in process to talk about building a positive future on the 10th anniversary of the events of 9/11. If we want a better world, we must first study our own emotions. Then we can transmute fear and move towards a safer and better life for everyone. I just want to give you one key to shifting your energy. Love and fear are two sides of the same coin. We feel emotions depending on the direction in which our own life energy is moving through us. When we fear, our energy contracts and withdraws inward away from the surface. We look pale and we feel cold. We want to retreat from the world. But when we feel love, that very same energy is flowing the other way, starting at our core and flowing outward towards the world. So fear is dark. Love is radiant. But they are signs of different movements of the very same energy. So here's the key. When you are afraid, you may notice that you tend to hold your breath. If you can remember just to let that breath go, to allow it to swing easily in a connected and gentle cycle of inhale and release, inhale and release, then the pattern of fear will gradually shift and your energy will begin to expand towards the world. It's a choice you can make intentionally. If you can breathe freely in the presence of a strong emotion, you will find that you have that emotion, but the emotion does not have you. Your breath is the connection to life itself. It is the sky inside your body. It is your passport to safety.
Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fire It Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network, live from the One Gathering here at the University of Washington. And today on Fire It Up with CJ, I have Ragini Michaels, an internationally recognized speaker in behavioral change. She also is a founder of the Whole Brain Wisdom School, and the author of a book coming out this May entitled Unflappable, 6 Steps to Staying Peaceful and Happy No Matter What. So the focus of the next segment is really shifting from fear to love and looking at it from a spiritual perspective and covering some of the misconceptions that people have about making the shift. So in the previous segment, Ragini, we were talking about making the shift from a psychological perspective and an emotional perspective. What does it mean to make the shift from a spiritual perspective?
Well, I think you have to understand, again, what you mean by love, first of all. And I can just a short little story. When I was in the ashram with my spiritual master a long time ago in India, everybody in there, it was like all the love, you know, the love fest, as most ashrams are, right? This was with Osho or Rajneesh, so it was all about love, right? And people used to talk about love, and they would talk about it all the time. And just as they talked about truth, they talked about love. And I actually kept walking around going, I don't get it. I don't get what this is. The only thing I really get is respect. I understand respect. I got that piece. But I don't really get this truth. What is the truth that you guys, you spiritual guys, are saying is the truth?
Yeah.
And then I get, it's the absolute. What is that? Because if you have absolute, you got relatives. So I'm a little confused here about where to go.
You were one of those in the ashram.
I was one of those who walked around and said, okay, I got to believe I have a soul. Okay, they say I have a spirit. Totally. Who knows why I was there? God only knows, because I didn't know why I was there. But the point was that I was very confused about, not only as we talked earlier about truth, but also what was this love thing? What was it they were talking about? Because I actually had near zero idea, because my personality experience with love was not so pleasant. I have a long history of not so happy relationships. But it was okay. I learned a lot. And I got to be like really, you know, express my dark side really good.
Right.
It did not make me happy, hence my book about how to be happy.
Right.
But nevertheless, I would always ask, what do you mean by love? What do you mean by it?
Yeah.
I don't know what
you
mean.
What do they mean?
Because if you mean like be happy, be sweet, be charming, I'm screwed. Because there's no way I can be able to do that all the time. No way. Forget it. I might as well just get my ticket to hell right now. Because I am not going to be able to ever be that way. I was convinced of that.
And I would have been right there with you, Ragini. I'm serious. I would have been like, I'm out.
Fortunately.
Give me the cigarettes. I don't even smoke, and I'd be smoking cigarettes after that scenario.
Well, the curious thing was the guru that I was with would say, you know, you might as well go to hell because that's where all the interesting people are. It made me feel better, although the goal was actually to have a happy life, right?
Yeah.
So I really was confused about that, because by the definition of love that I understood people to be talking about, I knew I was never going to be able to get that.
Sweet, so, charming.
Sweet, compassionate, loving, caring. You know, I mean, I'm not the nicest person in the world. I'm fairly narcissistic. You know, my personality structure. Now, I have learned that that's not me.
Right.
But it is mine.
Right.
But when I thought it was me, there was no way I was ever going to be loving.
Yeah.
One day, a friend of mine who was sort of my mentor there, one of the people in the ashram, I was crying and I went up to him and I said, I just don't get it. I'm so tired of people talking about love and wearing these shirts that say, you know, life of the sannyas is a love affair. What does that mean? I'm just like, I'm so out of it. And he said, Ragini, come here. And he took my hand and we went and we sat in one of the gardens.
Mm.
And we just sat there on the bench and he held my hand until I stopped crying. And we sat there and we watched the little circles come on the pond top from the little dragonflies, you know, and we listened to the birds and watched the bamboo. And he leaned over to me and he said, Ragini, this is love.
Aww.
And I went, and it changed my life. Honestly, it did. Because it wasn't conceptual. And that's the thing that I think we confuse about moving from fear to love, is we're operating on a concept, right? And it's got all these ideas in it, you know, and we have, and mostly because we haven't gone through the door of duality yet or polarities, we think like half of those ideas are good and half are bad, right? I'm supposed to be good and not bad. I'm supposed to be loving and never hate. I'm supposed to be free of judgment and never say somebody, you know, sucks because they hurt my feelings.
Right.
Okay, I'm never supposed to do that. And when you start to understand that, if you really get in your mind that love is not a concept, not spiritual love, it's not a concept.
Mm.
Neither is human love, for that matter. But most of the time, we're really stuck in the conceptual aspect of what it means. And the reason I say the door is opposites is because when you balance out opposites in your mind stops, and you're catapulted into the actual experience of what it means to be in the realm of spiritual love, which is still and beautiful and wonderful. It's neither feminine nor masculine. It's bigger than all of it. And that's available to every human being when you have the wonderful gift of being able to get outside your mind just a little bit, outside of concepts. So I think that's a major thing, is not only do you need to know what truth is, you need to understand what love is in your own perspective and what it is you're actually going for.
Right. Well, what's interesting about when you're describing the beautiful story of the bamboo and, you know, the water. It was just beautiful. And at a certain level, I could feel when you said that's love, I'm like, yes, I could feel what that was. Mm-hmm. And then the little mind part of me, or the big mind part of me, whatever you want to say, came up and said, I still don't get it.
Well, listen, that I understand that. Because after that experience, it took me another 15 years to get this process down where I could actually take what I learned there and actually make it practical.
Yeah.
So what does that mean practically, you know? I mean, so what am I supposed to do, walk around and just not think anymore? You know, that's not going to make me very productive in the world.
Right, right.
So part of my work has been, how do you take that and actually make it a ground for people to actually, you know, live from?
Right.
Really, you just need the experience. You don't need to be in it all the time.
And I know you just said not to conceptualize it, but alas.
But you have to.
Yeah.
What to do.
Yeah.
It's a paradox.
Yeah, so help my brain conceptualize that moment when you, I know it's hard, right, because you probably had your own personal experience when you saw the, you know, the concentric circles or whatever, or the beauty of, you know, I would be sitting at that pond going, I still don't get it. I'm screwed. Now Ragini has it and I don't. Where's that train to hell where all those interesting people are going?
Let it go on that one.
Exactly. I think I've already got a ticket. All right.
Well, here's the thing, though. This is really, I mean, it's a great question.
Yeah.
Because I used to sit and ask myself, how come I can have all these experiences in this ashram, you know, with this kind of love,
mm-hmm.
and still walk out of here and be so miserable?
Hmm.
What is it that's going on in my brain that keeps kicking these experiences out as somehow not relevant to my life?
Yeah.
When they're actually the total actual experience of presence and being, you know, so, but I kept going, well, that's not relevant to daily life. It's not relevant to making a living. It's not relevant to having a good relationship. What am I going to do? Sit and look in my partner's eyes 24/7?
Right.
You know, well, who's going to take out the garbage? What am I going to do when he keeps leaving the cap off the toothpaste, which I eight.
Right.
Okay. You know, what am I going to do? I'm just going to smile and then I'm going to get resentful and it doesn't work.
Right.
Right. So part of that is understanding that your mind can never understand it. Mm-hmm. This was one of the most freeing things that I ever found, was really getting that I couldn't understand it, which is why I landed up in the realm of mysticism, the mystic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I were to say I'm anything, I'd say I'm a mystic, because the mystery of it all is the only place to be comfortable living with for someone like me whose mind wants to know,
mm-hmm.
because it can't. But you, the you that's not your mind, can know it directly.
Mm-hmm.
But your mind can never know it. But you can, but your mind can't.
Yeah.
But you can, but your mind can't.
No, and I felt that.
That's a big distinction.
I could feel that. I mean, I could feel my husband's love. I could feel it. I could feel the presence of his love, and you know, it wasn't the exact, you know, it wasn't an image. I could just feel it in my heart, and I definitely felt it. So I understand that experiential sense of it, and it's really hard to explain what that is.
It is. And what it requires to take it into your daily life and live from love, the kind we're talking about, is faith.
Yeah.
Faith that it's a ground underneath you that's there, and if you practice enough, you can go into it at any moment in your life that you wish to.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn to step out of your mind, step back in your mind, step out of your mind, step back in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get this new neural pathway laid down in your brain, which is what a lot of enlightened and mystical people can do, is they just move back and forth really fast, right? And so you know you're not your mind, but you have to use your mind to be here.
Okay, I'm getting confused, though. How do we get here? We got here. Are we?
No, I know.
I know we're talking about love, but I'm just, so here's what I'm doing, because my mind, my conceptual mind is ruling. And it needs to know.
That usually happens in these
conceptual minds. Conceptual minds need to know.
That's what I should call my wisdom school. Conceptual minds need to know.
I know. I can't
That's
help
great.
It.
Go ahead.
Why can't I just get the null set for my brain? I wish it would happen.
The way to get the null set for your brain is what I've been working on for 25 years, and which is what's in that book.
Yeah.
The six steps for how to get there. Because when, and it really is a back to opposites again, when you can balance opposites, which is really duality, then you see that they're really oneness
mm-hmm.
in disguise.
Mm.
It's oneness just dressed up as two.
Can you say that again?
It's
duality is, this is what I do when I talk to Say it again. Say it again. Will you say it again?
And then you write it down, I see.
Duality is the what?
It's oneness disguised as two.
Oneness disguised.
Because this is the plane of duality. So people are looking for unity consciousness. It is right here. If you look at duality, don't try to transcend it.
Mm-hmm.
Try to embrace it. And you will see when you embrace it that there's a unity there. There's a harmony. There's a creativity that's there by design, right? That makes the world go round. Once you get how that works, you can actually step into love a lot more, because what it does is it stops your mind. If I go love and hate are equal in my mind, if I can get that, you know, they're of equal value. Neither one is totally accurate, totally complete, right? Mm-hmm. My mind doesn't know which way to go, so it stops.
Right.
And guess where I am? Sitting by the pond, watching the little circles on the water and listening to the birds. Okay, wherever that is, whether it's in my living room or it's on a train or whether it's sitting in the middle of traffic on I-5, it doesn't really matter, you know, because that's always there.
Okay, so let's take the sitting on a traffic at I-5, which people may be doing now.
That's true.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, so people are listening on I-5. They're like, I'm not going to get home on time. They're in a place of fear. Oh, my God. No. Why is that guy cutting in front of him? He's a jerk. Why is that guy, okay, so this is, so take me through that practical example on getting from that point to this, see the oneness as disguised as two. I'm just trying to take the practical example of me.
Well, I'm sitting there on the freeway and I'm in a hurry.
Yep.
Why am I in a hurry? Because I'm afraid that if I don't get somewhere, something's going to happen that I don't want to have happen.
Right.
Right? So I'm speeding.
Right.
Okay, so I'm going fast. What's the opposite of fast?
Slow.
Okay. What's the opposite of getting what you want?
Not getting what you want.
Not getting what you want. Okay. So if you sit back and you say, you know, does it really matter? Right? Which one of these happens? If I understand that sometimes I'm going to go fast and sometimes I'm going to go slow and I have a choice right now and it doesn't matter which one I take because the traffic isn't going to move any faster, whichever one I choose.
Right.
Right? It isn't going to go faster. It isn't going to go slower. It's not about the external world. It's about my internal world.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to get fast and get home again, I'm really polarizing. I'm really grabbing on to speed is importance. You can't slow down.
Okay, so I say to myself, I'm actually gravitating towards speed and getting home quickly and getting this done. And if I were to see the oneness in this, I could also say, I'm also going to try to equally embrace slowness and not getting what I want.
Well, here's the
reason. Is that what you do?
Yes, because here's the thing. Fast is defined by the absence of slow.
Right.
Slow is defined by the absence of fast. The minute you say one is better than the other, you're caught up in the game.
Okay.
You're caught up in it. The minute you can say...
What game?
The game of life without awareness.
Uh-huh.
You still have to play the game of life, but you do want to play it with awareness if you're on this journey and you're listening to this broadcast. You're obviously on this journey.
Okay.
Okay? So if fast is defined by the absence of slow and slow is defined by the absence of fast, it means that they're interrelated.
Right.
They are like a deep... They're married longer than you and your husband.
Right.
They're not separating ever.
Right.
Okay. So if you understand that, then you can see that there's a balancing going on. And if you say while you're sitting in your car, fast is important and I'm not going to go for slow. This is not acceptable to me that this traffic isn't moving. I am so irritated with it, which I do frequently. And then I go, slow is happening.
She actually did this in the car when we drove over here. She's just not making this up.
I'm not. I have to work with this one. I do get irritated.
You were getting irritated.
I want to get where I'm going, right?
Right.
So I'm polarizing at that moment and saying, I want fast because it's better.
Right.
Slow, I don't want. I want to move away from slow. I'm not balanced anymore because life is both. And actually what's happening externally is slow.
Ah, okay, I get it.
If I want to be at peace and just lean back, take a breath, listen to the sounds.
Right.
You know, there's horns, there's, you know, the radio, there's some dog barking behind me, some baby crying because the person's got their windows open. And just be there. And
right.
then it's a whole different thing.
Right. It's the equivalent of sitting near the pond. So here's what I'm getting. When you're driving, for those of you out there driving and getting really irritated because you are preferring to be in a fast place because you're judging that that is better, you can say, slowness is arising. You take the opposite of that. What's the opposite of fast? Slowness. So you say, slowness is arising. Both fast and slow is part of the universe. Right? Right? I'm saying right. Both first, fast and slow are part of the universe. I'm totally present to what's happening in the universe right now, which is slowness.
Irritably, I say that.
But I'm accepting that both fast and slow are part of the universe. And like the stillness that you saw at the pond where you're just looking at those items and just being present to what was, right? You weren't judging beautiful pond, ugly flowers, you know what I mean?
Well, I wasn't, but then I started to.
Yeah.
Because that's what the mind does.
Yeah.
So you can, over time, you develop the ability to let you just watch that.
Yeah, you watch what is.
Experience it. That's being human.
Yeah, isn't this fascinating? What is right now is I'm experiencing both slowness and fastness as I'm sitting here in I-5. And you know what? Now that I'm just so present to what is, I didn't even notice that, you know, this wonderful woman is talking on the radio. So listen, people. Right, but that's what you're saying. That's what, how you take a practical example, finding out what it is that you are really wanting, grabbing to happen.
And grasping.
Yeah, and say, okay, what is the opposite of this? And the way that I get to a spiritual shift of making my move from fear to love is to say, okay, both of these things are arising, and they're present, and this is part of the universe, and I accept it. And I will embrace it, and I will be present to it. I will remember that wonderful woman, Rogany, who said to me, this is like a pond with bamboo surrounding it.
I think the more that you actually allow yourself to see how many polar opposites or sets of polar pairs in just surround you, we actually swim in a sea of polarities.
Mm-hmm.
And we aren't conscious of it, because most of the time what we're trying to do is get the one we think is right and get rid of the one we think is wrong.
Right.
So I want to be loving. I don't want to be hateful. I want to be blissful. I don't want to be miserable. I want to feel joy, and I don't want to feel sorrow.
Right.
I mean, and this, I'm not saying that you consciously are doing that, but unconsciously, this is the way that, I mean, my background is in physiological psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain is wired out of physical survival to move you towards what's pleasurable to survive and away what's harmful, because you might die. The species might die out.
Right.
This, unfortunately, still applies to your emotional and psychological levels and your quest for spiritual awakening. So to become more conscious of it and realize what you want to do is become aware of duality, become aware of it in the way of looking at it as polar opposites.
Right.
And then your job, it gets more clear, your job is to become big enough to expand your consciousness to be able to embrace both of those things as equally valuable, equally valid. They both have strengths. They both have weaknesses. And there's a balance going on there. And if you look really close, you can see they're actually unified.
Right.
They're actually, it's oneness in action on this plane.
Yeah.
If you look close enough and you stay with it, you get to see it. And that's what those six steps that are in the book that I had to write, because I had to share this with people.
Right.
Because it actually ultimately brought me more happiness.
Six steps to getting to this place.
Yeah.
So, you know, the interesting thing, because this is all about 9/11, and so, you know, people, like we said, have so many opinions that are so strong, of which they believe they are completely right. And as we started off the segment, they are completely right and they're completely wrong. Right? I mean, you have to accept that they are completely right and they're also completely wrong, and that they're valid and they're incomplete.
They're valid and incomplete. I wouldn't say they're wrong. But there's not just one right.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And that's really hard to get your
head around. I like that. There's not just one right.
Yeah. It isn't, you don't have to say, you know, you're wrong. You know, you're not right, so you're wrong. It's that there's lots of rights.
Right.
Because that's the diversity of the one whole that we're all wanting to really get, that we're a part of and feel we're a part of and act from the place where we know that we're a part of that.
Yeah, so I'm bringing back to this event. So let's say that, you know, you were at this event, the 9/11 event, and on Sunday, which happens at the Seattle Center near the fountain, you're at that event, you run into someone who is, you know, has some type of billboard that you just, it just gets you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you look at it and say, wow, there is diversity happening. There is, you know, this is oneness disguised as two.
Yes, and if that person comes at me with their billboard, I will defend myself.
Right.
I will take my purse and bat them on the head, because that's the other side of being love and human. Love and action is also to take care of your form.
Right.
This is also the unity and whole.
So I'm
just saying, you don't want to polarize and say, okay, now I'm just going to let everything be what it is. No, you have a position. That's part of your specialness, your uniqueness,
right.
And you're going to live that position. But if you live it with conscious awareness that it's a position and it's not a truth, mm-hmm. and it's your job to live that position mm-hmm. and to live it with totality and truth and all your intensity, and at the same time you know it's not true, it's really a loving place to be, because you're not going to hit somebody over the head with your purse unless they hit you first.
Yeah.
And you may not even decide to hit them then. I mean, that's just the action arises.
Yeah.
And I mean, is that clear?
Yeah, no, I think this echoes back to our big, gigantic salad lunch. said to me.
That was a big salad.
It was a gigantic salad. It was delicious, but it was gigantic. Where you said that, you know, I think that what happens when you go to this place of making a shift from fear to love is that there is this compulsion to say, I have to be good, I have to be nice, I have to be sweet, I have to be compassionate, I have to be loving 100% of the time. And that's not possible, right?
Well, it's not possible for the other thing, in addition to duality, that we need to wake up to and make a daily part of our diet, and that is the fact of impermanence or change.
Okay.
You can be nothing 100% of the time with no change.
Right.
Every single thing that you mentioned has an opposite to balance it.
Right.
That's the nature of the game on this plane of reality. So that's the key. You have to just...
Okay, so I
understand nothing can remain the same. Impermanence, change is always going to happen when you can really, you know, go with the flow. See, the key is you got to know what the flow is.
Right.
That's what I feel the last 25 years, with a lot of help from students and clients to help me with intriguing, interesting questions and objections, have produced a set of 6 steps. Which can help you get to that place. That's very helpful.
Yes. So Ragini Michaels here. She is the author of a book called Unflappable, 6 Steps to Staying Peaceful and Happy No Matter What. She's also founder of the Whole Brain Wisdom School. What does that, Ragini, describe?
It's the art and science of conscious living. It's how to look at it conceptually and how to get the concept into the muscles of your body and the neurons of your brain.
My children should go to that school. Forget about the private school they're going to. Just go to Ragini's school. Okay. Now, one of the things that we did over, let's talk a little bit about what we did during the course of the last couple months, which is to look at anger. We looked at guilt and shame. We looked at jealousy and envy. We looked at fear of the future, fear of the unknown, fear of success. And we also looked at
perfectionism.
Why did we look at those things?
Because those are the primary emotional obstacles to self-love,
yes.
to making this movement. Once you've got the duality, once you take a fresh look at truth and you start the process of forgiveness, if you want to then make it to the self-love, these are the obstacles that are generally in the way.
Yeah, and I think that the key thing when you are feeling angry or guilty or jealousy, the key thing is getting like the SOS, like emergency help, so that you don't yell or scream or, you know, beat yourself up, but that you move to a place of being peaceful and having a spiritual and psychological and emotional understanding of what those things are. And that's really the intention of the series that we did. Is I'm kind of a how-to maniac, and so...
You are.
I am a how-to maniac, so I'm like, well, how do I do that? So I'm angry, well, you're telling me to stop, well, how do I do that? Tell me 6 steps, quickly, you know?
That's what I used to say in the ashram all the time. If you tell me to drop my mind one more time without telling me how...
Exactly. People want to know how. Am I right? People want
to
know how.
That's right.
So, I mean, these shows that are on WWW Fired Up with CJ, they're on iTunes, they're on the Transformation Talk Radio Network, they're on my website at Fired Up with CJ. I swear, my husband was having a hard time. I'm like, listen to Ragini's show on perfectionism. Talk to me afterwards. Seriously, these shows are that good. Your advice and wisdom is that good that if you're feeling one of these negative emotions, go to the website, pull it up. That's your emergency thing. Don't throw the whatever you're going to throw across the room. Don't punch anything. Don't go eat your Haagen-Dazs pint.
Or while you're doing it, go and listen to the tape.
And then feel guilty about it.
No. Enjoy your ice cream. It's okay.
Oh, Russ. So thank you so much, Ragni. I appreciate your wisdom, your humor, and just great how-to advice, as always. Listen to my show, people. Fired Up with CJ, playing every Thursday on the Transformation Talk Radio Network at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time or 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I'm going to close with the namaste, which is something we say in yoga, which is the light in me honors the light.
My joy song.